it's not enough to be a privacy lawyer. You need to be a privacy specialist, which requires other elements. This is not just a job of sitting on a desk and filling forms. It's more. It's about creating a culture. I think that we really need to know about...
Are you ready to know what you don't know about Privacy Pros? Then you're in the right place.
Welcome to the Privacy Pros Academy podcast by KZN Privacy Experts, the podcast to launch, progress, and excel your career as a privacy pro.
Hear about the latest news and developments in the world of privacy.
Discover fascinating insights from leading global privacy professionals.
And hear real stories and top tips from the people who've been where you want to get to. We've trained people in over 137 countries and counting.
So, whether you're thinking about starting a career in data privacy,
or you're an experienced professional,
this is the podcast for you.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Privacy Pros Podcast. The privacy landscape is booming with over 10,000 new privacy jobs being created every single year. Lawyers with the right skill are in high demand. But what specific skills are employers and companies looking for? In this episode, I'm going to chat with a special guest, a lawyer and a privacy expert who's going to discuss the three most sought after skills for privacy lawyers, how to acquire them, and all of the exciting career opportunities available in this industry. I'm your host, Jamal Ahmed, award-winning global privacy expert and founder at the Privacy Pros Academy, where we're building a community of world-class privacy professionals that are coming together to empower businesses to adopt honest privacy practices. I'm thrilled to have you listening today. And this episode is brought to you by KZN Privacy Experts. We provide pragmatic solutions for multinational corporations, and we're creating a future where every woman, every man, and every child enjoys freedom over their personal information. And to learn more about my number one international best-selling book, The Easy Peasy Guide to the GDPR, head over to bestgdprbook.com. Now, today's special guest is none other than Dr. Andrea Tapia Hoffman. She's an Ecuadorian-German lawyer and certified information privacy professional, certified information privacy technologist too. Dr. Andrea has been an in-house privacy specialist since 2017, after many years of working in other fields of law and finishing her PhD in economic law. Dr. Andrea is originally from Ecuador and has lived in Germany for the last 11 years. Welcome to the Privacy Pros podcast, Dr. Andrea.
Thank you, and thank you very much for the invitation. I'm very happy to be here today.
I'm so happy you're here. And my first question for you is, if you were stranded on a deserted island, what three items would you want to have with you?
I would definitely would like to have my phone to try to find a way of communication. I would definitely like to have some water and hopefully something to eat, and hope that's enough until I get somebody to rescue me.
All right, awesome. So some water to keep you hydrated, some food to keep you nourished, yeah, and some way to communicate and ask for help. Okay, so Dr. Andrea, you transitioned from law to specializing in privacy. What I want to know is, what motivated you to transition, and what challenges did you face during this transition?
I don't see it actually as a transition. I see it a bit more as a specialization. Because being a privacy specialist or the privacy world requires a lot of understanding of the legal aspects. We have GDPR, which is a regulation. To know the purpose of the data processing, we need to see the contracts. To set the rules of the game for a particular processing, we need data protection agreements, right? So there's a lot of legal documents and a lot of legal analytic skills that you need to do that. But what is interesting about this field is that it takes us lawyers out of our comfort zone of everything that's legal. And I think this is the most attractive part of it, because it's not enough to be a privacy lawyer. You need to be a privacy specialist, which requires other elements. Let's talk about employment law, for instance, this field of law in which everything is very straightforward, right? The relationship employee and employer is given by a contract, which is based on a law. If there's a conflict, you go to a judge or to a mediator, and that's it. In privacy law, it's not that way, because you also need to implement the law. And for that, you need to have a broader understanding of business and many other things of your company, especially if you work in-house.
Thank you. So essentially, you saw it more as a opportunity to become a specialist rather than a kind of pivot or a transition. And yes. What you identified, the main challenge was, is actually getting to know the business and coming up with pragmatic and practical ways of supporting them, but first understanding what it is that they need, and you bring that legal expertise and that specialism to allow them to do the things that they want to do in a compliant way.
Exactly.
Okay, great. Now, you have experience in both Latin America and Europe. What differences have you observed in the way both these regions approach privacy?
I think there are substantial differences. One of them is that in Europe, there is a much longer tradition of privacy and data protection. Or to give you an idea, in 1981, we already had the Convention 108 of the Council of Europe, and the first data protection law in Latin America, it was enacted in 1999 in Chile, and then in the year 2000 in Argentina. Then we had one in Mexico in 2011, if I'm not wrong. And in my home country, Ecuador, the first data protection law is from 2021. So there are several years of difference, of experience in what it means to have a data protection law between Europe and Latin America. And I think the next thing that is also an interesting one, at least to me, I think there are cultural differences, right? Mm. For instance, in Latin America, we are people that are closer, are more open about our private lives. We practice active kindness. In Europe, you have people that value a little bit more probably their privacy, their personal lives. They don't open so easily. So I think it's a bit hard to tell a Latin American person, look, now there is this law. We need to understand that it's not about protecting data. It's also about the private sphere about the other person, and create a little bit this culture and this understanding that even if it doesn't look that way, it translates in, for instance, a marketing department thinking, I can send as many requests as I want, and you have to tell them no. There's a limit for that. So it extends even to these kind of areas of organizations and of everyday work.
Thank you for sharing that. I always find it quite fascinating how different places, different jurisdictions, different continents approach privacy. I was recently out in the Middle East, and they've recently introduced the PDPL, which you're aware of. And one of the things they were saying is, look, yeah, you guys in Europe, you talk about you brought in the convention in 1981. You had the United Nations Declaration on Human Rights. But why did you need those things? It's because you had leaders who were doing the worst things to humanity. If you look at our history, we've had privacy enshrined in our way of life from 1400 years ago. We follow the Holy Quran. If you look at Surah Light in the Quran, privacy was first introduced 1400 years ago, and it talks about the privacy of the home, it talks about the privacy of people. So for us, we haven't needed to have these laws. So yes, just because you have passed a man-made law earlier, it doesn't mean that you have any more superiority when it comes to privacy. Actually, you could learn a few things from us in the way we actually have etiquette. Did you know, for example, that when we go and knock on somebody's door, we stand to one side so we don't peer into the house when they open the door? No, you didn't know that, because there's no law that says we have to do that. That's just our practice. That's just etiquette. We have this concept of amana, which is trust, which means if someone shares something with us, we have to make sure that we uphold the trust that they gave to us when they gave us that thing. So we didn't feel like we needed to regulate it or legislate it, because it's just an inherent part of our culture. And so I was like, you know what, that's actually quite fascinating. So sometimes we might look from a European lens and say, oh yeah, they're quite immature when it comes to privacy and stuff. But actually, they think the opposite. They think we're immature here in Europe because we had to have a law to bring this in. Because before that, we didn't value people's privacy. We didn't have anything in place to recognize those things. And so understanding all of those different cultural nuances, I think, is super important. And especially when you bring in a new legislation, it has to be compatible with the culture of the society. And I think that's what the attitude of the regulators needs to actually support in each of the different jurisdictions. And I know some of the work you did was actually advising the Ecuador government because of the time that you had working as a member with another regulator. And I'd be quite interested to see what were some of the challenges that they had to get their heads around.
I think the main issue, and you are right that we need to understand it from a cultural perspective, but the reality is, on the one hand, that technology has advanced in a way that the most common practices of protecting privacy are not applicable anymore because everything has become much more complex and it's harder and harder to tackle every day that passes. And I think that technology is something great. I value technology a lot. I think that we have a better world in some ways because of the technology advances. But of course, it also comes at the risk of limiting our scope of privacy and of not knowing how our personal data, for instance, is used. And for Latin America, that has a strong interest in the EU. Why? Because the EU is one of the main commercial partners of Latin America.
Yes.
And then comes the GDPR as the gold standard of data protection in the entire world. So what happens is that many Latin American countries need to hit the ground running because many of these countries, we cannot afford not to be able to trade with Europe anymore. And at the core of trade is personal data. Why? Because we work with people and people have personal data. I think that what the legislators have done and are doing, because even in Chile, there's at the moment an amendment of the data protection law. In Brazil, there has been a new data protection law. And the new data protection law of Ecuador, for instance, it tries to implement the GDPR principles. Okay, we need to follow this gold standard. We need to manage to implement it. And now the challenge is to see how organizations are going to deal with it. And this is something that we don't know yet. Also, the other question is how the data protection authorities in the countries, what they are going to do with the law. Are they going to be directly sanctioning? Are they going to play a role of educators, taking into account that they themselves need to understand what it is about? So I think this is something that we are going to really see in the coming years.
Wow, thank you for sharing. That's really insightful there. What I really like about what you were saying there is everyone has to get on board with these data protection laws because nobody wants to get left behind. And as you see the increase and the emergence of technology and the globalization and digitization of personal information, it's more and more relevant. And it's relevant to anyone that actually wants to trade with European businesses, anyone that wants to trade commercially and have a growing economy, those governments have to bring in measures that will still say, hey, we're open for business. And unless they can offer essential equivalents of handling that personal data of European citizens, that's a whole section of the world that they could potentially lose business from.
Yes, absolutely. If we take a look, only Argentina and Uruguay have been recognized by the European Commission as having an adequate standard of data protection. They are the only two Latin American countries that have adequacy. And now also the transfer of data has new requirements after SREMS, and that also involves, for instance, the rule of law in each country. And sometimes the rule of law in Latin America is not as strong as the rule of law in Europe. So this is also a challenge that each controller and each processor, it's not up to them to solve the problem of the countries in general that they need to tackle. And beyond that, then you also go to the technicality of the everyday work. So it's not only about the principles, the rights, the obligations. It's, for instance, how do you perform assessments? How do you embed the assessments in the processes of the company? The data protection laws, the compliance with them, have the challenge that it's not the kind of law that you need a department of three people comply. It's the kind of law that goes around all the organization. Everybody has to comply, from the person that opens the door to the management, passing through the marketing and sales department. Everybody needs to do something. It requires action and it requires compliance across the board.
You're right. It is actually all spanning. It's not just a tick box exercise for compliance or the lawyers or the risk team to do. It is actually something that the organization needs to live and breathe and adopt. And the other thing that I really like about, or what stood out to me from what you were saying, is you're saying, look, when we look at these things, we have to look at it from a holistic point of view. We have to look at the political, the economic, the social, the technical, the legislative environment. We have to look at all of those things. And once we consider all of those things, then we will be really able to understand who's open for business and where we can do business and where we can't. Now, following up from that, in your opinion, or based on your experience, what are the top three skills that you believe lawyers must absolutely have to thrive in privacy roles today?
I think that we really need to know about project management. That's one thing, because data privacy is about governance. It's about understanding the entire organization. It's about being able to lead the project, to bring everybody on board, to be able to test if your measures are working. And this requires a huge project management skills. Another that is very important, that is probably the most challenging for us lawyers, is to embrace technology. Because I don't think, for instance, that the data protection department and the cybersecurity department need to work in islands and not understand each other. Somehow, both departments, information security as well, they all need to speak the same language when it's about data protection. So we need to be able to understand, for instance, what is encryption, what is anonymization, how the IT architecture works or the company works, in order to be able to work together, pushing the data protection compliance in your organization and working with all the people that are involved, like the people in charge of all what is technology. And then I think that the key skill for all this, that sounds easy, but that not everybody has this skill, is communication skills. Because you really need to be able to talk to people and to understand that sometimes even if you repeat the same thing 10 times, it's still not understood because it's complex. Just defining what exactly is personal data, even if you say it and repeat it, it's complex when other people that are not trained in this area have data in their hands and they think that it isn't personal data, but it actually is. So you really need to have communication skills in order to pass the message and also be there for the people when they come with a question. So you need to have this willingness of teaching, explaining, and communicating.
You know what I love most about your answer is you said the top three skills are the actual soft skills. They're the jobs that help you do what you need to do. Anyone can go and get the knowledge. Anyone can go and get that technical information. But what you've identified there is, number one is, look, you need to know how to move things along. You need to know how to stay on top of your work. So you need great project management skills so you can coordinate with all of the different people, understand where the dependencies are, and make sure that you actually achieve what you set out to achieve within the budget and within the time frame required. Next, number two is you need to familiarize yourself with technology and the technological terms, because you don't want to be silos. You don't want to be island. You don't just want to keep stuff to yourself. The way we're going to achieve the organizational objectives, the way we're going to achieve the privacy program objectives, is by making sure we're communicating with the departments and the functions that are actually going to work alongside us. And we're actually trying to do similar things. We're just looking at it from two different angles. And so making sure that we can actually understand the terms they're using, understand the processes they're doing, understand the architecture that's supporting everything, so we can have those conversations, is super important. And tying into that, what you've identified is the communication skills, the ability to actually break down complex things and deliver that information in a way that everybody can understand. And that's all the way from the executive board down to the school leaver who's just joined from school and is handling the phones, for example. I really value those three skills, and it's one of the things that we actually teach at the Privacy Pros Academy. We teach them the art of communication. Project management, we don't focus on too much. There's so many tools that's available, and that's where being technologically literate actually helps. But when you work towards the certifications that you have, the Certified Information Privacy Technologist, for example, those things help you to get a really strong foundation so you can actually understand and go and have those conversations with the tech guys where they actually know, oh yeah, this person knows what I'm talking about, and they're more open to having those conversations with you. And I think those three soft skills that you identified are super important, and I'm so happy that you're actually recommending them for people who are specifically legally trained, because that's the difference that's going to help them make the difference and really thrive in their roles.
if you work in-house, because maybe if you work in a legal firm, it's more about just telling people what they have to do, right?
Yeah. But you can do this, you can't do that, yeah.
Exactly. This is you have to comply with that. We have advised you. That's a role. But if you work in the organization, you need to make it happen.
Okay. So let's say there's some lawyers or aspiring privacy pros who are like, you know what, Dr. Andrea, that's some excellent advice. That's probably what's been holding me back in my career. But how exactly should I go and develop these skills? So what practical steps or resources would you recommend to somebody who wants to stack those skills and develop them further?
I think that the good news are that there are many resources. You find online from YouTube videos explaining you things. If you don't know what something is, you can Google it. I have gotten these certifications that you have mentioned, and I think that they have helped me a lot to develop my knowledge and to be able to understand other people that also work, but from a different perspective, like from an IT security perspective of the same that I work, and see what their perspective is and understanding and try to make it match with what the law requires and with my own legal perspective of the situation. So I think that getting certification is something that helps. There are books that also are available. In terms of communication skills, there are also trainings out there of people that can teach you how to pass your message. But I think it's not so much a matter of whether there are or aren't resources, because they are available. It's that you need to have an attitude of keep on learning and of keep on growing and decide, okay, I want to be a privacy specialist. This is going to require that I take the time to learn and to improve, because this is a very dynamic area that is changing every day. There's always something new. There's always a new act that is not only GDPR, let's say the Data Act, that is coming, that is influencing also the way we apply our data protection strategy. So I would say have that willingness of keep on learning, especially in an area like the privacy area that has future, that is actually going to be something that we are going to keep on talking for many years. So it makes sense to develop in this area.
I love that. And you're right, there is an abundance of resources. In fact, there's so many resources. And I think one of the challenges that I find with some of the mentees when they first come to the academy is they're not selective with the resources. There's so much out there. Not everything is high quality. Not everything is actually good. And I think it's important to be selective. But you said, look, there's an abundance of resources. There's YouTube, there's Udemy, there's the Privacy Pros Academy. There's all of these amazing places to go. But what matters more than that is the actual mindset, the attitude that I want to be constantly learning, I want to be constantly developing, and the identity that I am a privacy specialist or I want to be a privacy specialist. So what do I need to do to get 1% better every single day? And I think that mindset and that attitude is the key that unlocks everything. So for example, when someone joins the Privacy Pros Academy Accelerator Program, we say there's 5 pillars that we need to focus on over those 12 weeks. And the first pillar is all about the mindset. It's all about this attitude of being positive, of saying, I want to learn and I want to be a person of value and I want to add value to the industry. Then we say, look, you need to be a subject matter expert. So you need to know all of the subject matter topics that are relevant, but not just at a surface level. We want you to own it from here so you understand the breadth and the depth of it, so you can really have meaningful conversations and start connecting the dots. And then we say, look, having the knowledge is great. Now you've got the subject matter expertise, you can talk the talk. But now you need to walk the walk, which means we need to take those knowledge and make sure that we turn them into skills so you can actually apply that knowledge into actionable, practical, pragmatic steps that you can give to the business. And then we say, what you need to do now is start working on your reputation. You need to start focusing on your personal brand. So this is where we have to focus on the art of communication. This is where we have to show up on places like LinkedIn and add value. This is where we have to listen to people who know more than us and then share the takeaways of what we learned from those things to show that, hey, I'm actually focusing on improving and bettering myself too. And then the final thing we say is you need a supportive environment. So we wrap them in a community of world-class privacy professionals so they have the right environment to soak all of that in and by osmosis develop into these amazing people that we see transforming over the 12 weeks. What do you think of those pillars, Dr. Andrea?
I think, of course, they are very important. And you mentioned something that I forgot to mention. And you talked about mentorship. And I think that if you can get a mentor, that's a wonderful gift. If you can get somebody that can teach you, that can lead you, that you can learn from, that is really hard to find. But if you can find it, it's wonderful. I also think that the personal brand is important. And not only thinking about yourself in this case, but also in the importance that has to share your knowledge and to maybe become that person that leads other future privacy professionals in this path that I find really important and rewarding.
I 100% resonate with everything you said there. And as you can see, I've devoted my vocation to it. Now, can you share a personal story or an experience where having a specific skill has significantly impacted your success as a privacy professional?
I need to reinforce the communication skills. And I tell you that because at the beginning of my journey, I did not have yet the knowledge or the practice, or I had many more doubts than certainties around this when I decided to start here. But being able to communicate and to be open to other people was the way in which I was able to make them understand the importance of data privacy. So that was more important than anything at that point. And I think that's more important than anything, even now that I have many more years of experience and more knowledge, and I have seen many things already, and I have done a lot in this area. Still, I think that this willingness of communicating and this finding your ways of explaining the importance of data privacy, it's very important because it's common sometimes to face some rejection to it, because it's like you are putting more work on somebody's desk. So I think it's important to explain not only in a scary way why you have to comply, but what is the competitive advantage of your organization complying also, how it is an advantage for a business to do it and to be able to prove that you are GDPR compliant, for instance, and that you care about the personal data of others. And that requires, as I said, communication skills more than anything else.
That's super insightful. Thank you so much for sharing that. So what you're saying is, regardless of where you are in your career right now, the number one skill that's really going to help you get the success that you need or be effective in your role is being an excellent communicator. You need to communicate the value. You need to communicate why we're doing this. You need to be able to be open to understanding people and listening to them, but also getting them to be led by you on the journey, on the things of privacy. But you won't be able to do that unless you really work on your communication skills. You'll be a good listener, you'll be a good speaker, and you actually understand how to meet people where they are. Not everyone is going to be privacy educated. Not everyone is going to understand all the different terms. So you need the ability to go and break those things down and talk to them in a way that they actually understand, you get their buy-in, so you can achieve the goals that you need to achieve that effectiveness and achieve that success for the program or the project that you're actually working on.
Yes, because you can be a privacy professional with 25 years of experience, but if still you aren't able to communicate and to convince people, then really your knowledge and experience is not going to do much more. This is not just a job of sitting on a desk and filling forms. It's more, it's about creating a culture.
You're absolutely right. I completely agree and I completely resonate with that. It's been super insightful listening to you. You shared lots of different things about specializing in privacy, about some of the skills that you need to develop, about different cultural approaches around the world. And you've also left us with your top skill that's really helped you to be successful. And you're saying this is the most important skill, regardless of where you are, is actually having that ability to communicate effectively. Now, at the end of the podcast, we always give you, the guest, an opportunity to ask me a question. So what would you like to ask me?
I would like to ask you, in this journey of trying to guide people to be successful as privacy professionals, what has been your most rewarding experience?
Oh, that's an excellent question. There's a number of rewarding things. So let me tell you the ones that are coming in my mind right now. So the first most rewarding thing is you're spending time with people every single week, and every single week you're seeing them shift. It's almost like they're growing 2 inches taller because they're getting more confident. And then you see the aha moment, you see the complexion changes on their face. So just seeing that spark in them, that is so rewarding, first of all. And then they start getting results. So it's, oh, my employer said something to me, or they've given me a new project to work on, or, hey, I've just got hired and I've increased my salary by X amount. So those things are super rewarding. And then what really energizes you is 6 months, 1 year later, they come back and they say, hey, could you come over to dinner? We've just bought our new first house and we wouldn't have been able to do it if we didn't have the program in place. And I've just had a baby. There's this one gentleman, Tahir Chowdhury. He joined the program and he's probably one of the best, most rewarding stories that I can share with you. So he used to work in his family restaurant. That's the only thing he ever did. He never went to university. He didn't have any formal qualifications. And then once he had enough of the restaurant, he actually became an Uber driver. So he's never had any professional experience. He's never done anything. And he joins the program because one of his cousins joined, I think the year before, and got some great results. And he's telling me a story. And I was like, okay, show me your CV. He's like, I don't have a CV. I'm like, okay, what about LinkedIn? He's like, how do you create a LinkedIn profile? I'm like, okay, where did you go to university? What did you study? He said, no, I haven't done any of those things. So I was like, wow, if I can help this person, then I can probably help almost anyone. And so we got to work. He changed his mindset. That was the biggest thing. He had the attitude that I'm going to get this. And I know I have lots of disadvantages against the people I'm competing with. But over the course of the program, he managed to take on all of the information that we was giving him and did everything I asked him to do. And then he got a role as a data protection manager with a multinational company. Yeah. And he actually stayed in that role for over a year. So it doesn't show that he just got in there and then he couldn't do anything. Like, he actually knew what to do. But every time he didn't know what to do or he needed help, he knew to come to his mentors, go and reach out to the community to get the answers. And then he most recently has been promoted. He's actually moved. He's in the aviation industry now. They're dealing with all the private jets and he's increased his salary and he's so happy. His life has transformed. He's so much more confident. His relationship with his family has completely transformed because he now believes himself. He values what he does. He gets fulfillment from the work he's doing and he's a positive role model. And what really fulfilled me is a few days ago, I think he said it was his, I don't know if it was 10 years or 20 years. He said it's his wedding anniversary and he was filming and he put it on LinkedIn. You'll see, he said, I've just celebrated my wedding anniversary with my wife and my family, and now I'm going to meet my mentees. And he's now helping people change their careers and transform. They've seen the transformation he did, and now he's inspiring other people and helping other people to get similar results to him. And when I see that, the light and the torch is being passed on, that is so rewarding and it's so inspiring. And that's what really energizes me.
That's great. You're changing people's lives via privacy. Maybe some people wouldn't believe that it's possible, but you prove that it is.
Yeah, and this is it. It all comes down to mindset. I believe anything is possible. We just need to make a decision, commit to it, and create the conditions for success, and then just stack those skills and stack the right habits that's going to help us get there and surround ourselves with the people who can help us make it happen.
Absolutely. And have a long-term perspective, because of course it's going to take time, but you can celebrate every step of the way.
Yeah, I love that. Celebrate every step of the way. It's not about the destination. It's about the journey. And I think a lot of people forget to realize that. And a lot of people rob themselves of that joy because they're so focused on the gap between the destination and where they are that they forget to see and appreciate just how far they've come. And I think if more people just decided to be present and just look at, you know what, I've taken one step closer towards my goal and I've moved one step away from where I started. It's time to celebrate that. It's a quick win. They would have so much more self-esteem. All of this imposter syndrome would go out the window. And then if they just added the communication skills and focused on that you said, boom, they would catapult themselves away and really have some thriving careers just like yourself. Dr. Andrea, I want to say thank you so much for coming on today. You've shared some absolute powerful and valuable gems of how lawyers and in fact anyone can actually accelerate their career and what it takes to be successful and effective. So thank you so much.
I have really enjoyed your conversation, Jamal. Thank you very much for this opportunity and I hope to see you soon at some other point.
You're most welcome. And thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you leave us a review and also share your takeaways on LinkedIn or wherever else you share your takeaways and tag myself and Dr. Andrea and we'll come in and we'll show you some love too. Until next time, peace be with you.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe, like and share so you're notified when a new episode is released.
Remember to join the Privacy Pros Academy Facebook group where we answer your questions.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you're leaving with some great things that will add value on your journey as a world-class privacy pro.
Please leave us a 4 or 5 star review.
And if you'd like to appear on a future episode of our podcast,
or have a suggestion for a topic you'd like to hear more about,
please send an email to team@kzient.co.uk.
Until next time, peace be with you.